Ching ching, bling bling, let's cut the chatter. In today's episode, we explore the coaching standard beyond the X's and O's. Welcome to the Tucci Talks Wealth, Health, and Everything Else podcast. I'm your host, David Tucci, an educator, a father of three. Join me as I take you on a funky journey through life, from a reckless young man to a humbled older man. Each week, I will offer different insights on my life experiences and the experiences of others and how that has shaped our present day realities. So let's begin our funky journey into improving our health, wealth, and you guessed it, everything else. Welcome. It's Monday. Time for Tucci to talk. What are you going to talk about, Tucci? I don't know. Let's just find out. Monday. Oh, welcome. Welcome is right. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Tucci Talks, Wealth, Health, and Everything Else. I'm your host, David Tucci, and it is with regret that I have no shout-out for this week. Maybe the back-to-school buzz has people's priorities a bit confused, but guessing the crazy karaoke should be of high importance. Having said that, what is this week's song? Artist or song will suffice. Remember where you can reach me by email, david@TucciTalks75.com, or contact me on social media, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, @TucciTalks75. I'm excited for today's episode as my beloved co-host Tony Rick will join me on Tucci Talks as we delve into the world of coaching. Before we can do that, we must get to our recap, so stay with me and I'll be right back. What did I learn from having Joy on the podcast last week? Where do I begin? Let's start with something that I was never introduced to, a concept that I've never heard of until last week, toxic masculinity. Males not being able to feel vulnerable, not being able to show weakness, that needs to stop. And I have a suggestion for those males that feel like it's not cool to show vulnerability. How about this? Learn a fighting discipline, a martial art. It will center you. It will ground you. It will humble you. And it will definitely expose you. You will have no choice but to steep in vulnerability. And I promise you, you will come out a changed man. Next, our education system. We need courageous leaders at the top of the food chain. Without courageous leaders, you have a stifled system not willing to adapt to the landscape. And when you go down that food chain, you just have minions as administrators. We need thinkers, people. Once we have thinkers leading education, the ripple effect will be enormous. Like a coach inspiring their players to perform at their most optimal level. And speaking of coaches, it's time for today's guest. My next guest is a first-generation Canadian. His parents emigrated from Italy to give him an opportunity for a better life. He took advantage of that opportunity by surrounding himself with people of great influence. His decisions led him to becoming an educator, where he began to shape the young minds of the future. His passion for sport, parlayed with his passion to inspire, created the perfect marriage, coaching. He has had tremendous success in the soccer world, coaching his St. Edmund Campion Bears to 5 OFSA titles. With all that experience and knowledge, he has graciously accepted the invitation to share his insights with us today. It is a great honor to welcome Greg Spagnoli to Tucci Talks. Welcome to Tucci Talks. It's great to get this opportunity to sit down and have a discussion. I'd like to welcome my co-host, Tony Rick. Thanks for coming, buddy.
Glad to be here again, buddy. Glad to be here.
So this is episode 13. And you being of Italian heritage, Mr. Spagnoli, what does the number 13 mean to you? Isn't it something to do with luck?
Bad luck?
No, isn't good luck. It's good luck.
It's actually good luck. Yes, you're right. It's actually good luck in the Italian culture. You're correct.
So did you use a lot of that number to win those championships? Was there a lot of luck involved in you've won 5 OFSA titles?
Luck always plays a role. Absolutely. Always plays a role.
You just smashed him with the first question, eh? I just bang. No holds barred right away.
Okay, so I'm gonna segue. The title that I have for this episode is called The Coaching Standard Beyond the X's and O's. And I titled it Beyond the X's and O's because I don't want this episode to be about sports strategy. I want to delve into deeper rooted relationships that are forged within sport. So I want to discuss themes that listeners can understand without having any knowledge of sport. So having said that, like I mentioned earlier, you won 5 soccer championships. And for the listeners, OFSA is the Ontario Championship, which would be, this is for the international listeners. OFSA is the Ontario Championship, which is the equivalent to a state championship if you're south of the border. So what was it like winning that first championship as a coach?
It was actually, it's like the culmination of coming together of all the years of training, putting it together and seeing everything just kind of blossom before your very own eyes. It was a year where it was all kind of set up from our quarterfinal loss in 2008. Yeah, well, so we won in 2009 was our first OFSA championship. And in 2008, I would probably say that we probably had a very similar skill level. But for some reason, we just didn't have that chemistry, and we bowed out in the ROPSA quarterfinals, which is very early for us. So we lost that year, and I remember the following year, maybe 2-3 weeks into the school year in September, I think I had half the team knock on the door in my office and said, "When are we starting training?" And it was kind of like when you're a coach and you can see it in your players' eyes that they want something more than you, you know, you're going to have a good year. And so I think that 2008 kind of set us up for a championship run in 2009.
So why soccer? Where were your soccer roots forged?
I played my whole life since I was a kid, but I've been playing since I was five or 6 years old. Started off playing goalie, believe it or not. Wasn't very good at it. So I remember a coach said to me, "You're going to go up front because you're
that.
Fast.
I don't believe that.
Well, I didn't have the coordination to stop a beach ball. One of the two. But I remember my coach, and his name was Nick. I remember this like it was yesterday. I was like, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7. And he said, "You know what, Greg, this is not working now. We're going to put you up front." I was kind of just, you know, dejected and a little disheartened. I said, "Okay, you know, I'll go up front." I scored 3 goals in that game. And my father saying to me, "You never saw the two posts ever again unless you're putting the ball between them." So,
wow, you remember that story, and that was over 40 years ago.
Yeah, 30 some odd years ago. Yeah, long time ago.
The first hat trick of many, I'm sure.
I had a few. Yeah, I was lucky enough to bag a few of those. Yeah.
So listen, out of curiosity, you had mentioned. 2009 or whenever it was, you tore a strip off of Jonathan Osorio.
Yeah.
At a tournament because he wasn't doing what he was supposed to do. Can you do that? Or you thought, can you do that now? Like not can you do that as a coach or as an educator? Would the player appreciate you doing that? Would they be a suck about it? Would they take it positively? Would they take it negatively? Have their attitudes changed?
First thing is, two-part question, I guess. So the first thing is that he didn't do anything wrong that game, but I needed to show that I wasn't playing favorites. So I picked on him because I knew that he could take it. And as a leader, he did. this. So the second part of your question is, can or will players or student athletes today be able to take on that set of criticism? And I would argue no. I think that I think maybe in high school they have a different mentality now than they did, you know, 10 years ago. I think, you know, I think high school sports significantly changed in the last 5 to 6 years, as you both know, where I think the dedication's kind of changed a little bit in terms of how committed they are and what they're willing to put forward to that program perspective and philosophy. But I think a lot of those students, I think boys especially, I think maybe girls might be a little different, but I think guys, they really need that kind of stroking their ego a little bit at times. I think that they, you know, they might not be as tough and hard-nosed as they once were, but I think you also have to know your audience. I think if you know you have a leader who you can go at, like I did with John, I've had many other, you know, captains that thereafter that I would probably do the same. But I think you have to know your audience. And I think if you hit the wrong and strike the wrong chord with the wrong one, you might lose them for the rest of the year or lose them for the rest of the game. So, you know, it's always that balancing act of, you know, you got to kind of put them down, then you got to break them down, and you got to build them back up again.
The balancing act that you speak of, that comes, I guess, through experience. And I want to touch on this so we don't forget, but you ref basketball at a high level. Does that translate into coaching? Do you pick stuff up from reffing at a high level and then translating that into coaching?
Probably the other way around. I think being a coach and being able to read plays, I coached basketball for a number of years. So, you know, refereeing at a higher level, I think is about anticipating plays and knowing what coaches are feeling and the intensity of the game and reading the players' reactions and knowing how to diffuse. And I think when, as a referee, you kind of feel what's going on and you can see when things are either going to go sideways or, you know, you play a role in diffusing situations. So I think coaching for many years helped my officiating. I don't know about vice versa. Perhaps. I mean, I'm a very mellow referee, maybe not so much as a coach at times. I can get into it, but like we all are, because we're competitive in nature. But yeah, I think, you know, the experience, as you mentioned, plays a role. You definitely need to have that background, because a lot of coaches now, they try to take on a different sort of philosophy that their previous coaches that they had when they were students, when they were growing up, try to emulate that same type of philosophy, and it doesn't suit their personality. And it's only through experience can you decide to tweak things, and, you know, what works for you and one might not work for others. And you start to tweak things and you start to formulate your kind of philosophy for coaching.
Well said. So I can segue right into what I wanted to talk about next. So what is your coaching style? So I'm going to offer some styles here. There's sure. The business-like coach. Basically, you're professional. You act accordingly. There's expectation that you have to adhere to team standards. There's the authoritarian. That's self-explanatory. Coach creates the framework. Players listen. They do not question. There is the democratic style, where you get input from your players, and they feel that coach feels like input from the players is important. Also, you could have your fun, your happy-go-lucky coach. Winning isn't important. Having fun and enjoying the social aspect is. What is your style? It could be a combination. Maybe one predominates. What would you say?
It's funny that you've mentioned all that, because as you were saying it, I knew exactly what you're saying, because I think that's from one of our notes in a coaching course that we do.
Yeah, that is. That is one of our – that is a note in one of the coaching courses.
Yeah. Because and you know, I do a coaching course, a unit, I guess, within the soccer course at school, and we discuss this. And I always ask my players, because they are in my class, so then I also have that overlap with them being on the team. So they – I said, what do you think I am? Because it's always good to see what
of course.
Perspective is. Of course. You always think that you are a certain way, but then when you kind of poke and prod a bit and you ask your athletes about how they perceive you, you know, I'm a bit of a myriad, a bit of both, to be honest with you. I mean, I think I'm authoritative when necessary. I do like to seek information from my athletes. I need to know where they're at. They don't design my training sessions. I design my training sessions. Some coaches are a little bit too, I think, lax, and they really kind of they rely on their athletes for the input. That might be for the grassroots level, perhaps, where they're just not as knowledgeable or educated about the sport they're coaching. But I also think you got to be that nice guy gal at times too, because I think you're playing with delicate minds sometimes, and especially when you have players and bench personnel who aren't getting the minutes and they think they deserve that, you kind of got to be able to coddle them a little bit and you know, kind of praise them whenever the opportunity can present itself, so you keep them engaged and you know, building that whole healthy competition in sport is what keeps these guys honest. And so I think a blend of all of that is kind of me. I'm not really one in particular.
Spags, I want you to listen to this clip. I want to play this clip and keep in mind, I've seen this from coaches in all sports, all levels, and kind of this permeates through all parts of our society. I want you to have a listen and tell me what comes to mind.
That sounds like Tony Rick when we beat him in a preseason tournament.
you heard from through the wall. You heard through the wall. Yeah, I've done a couple of those before.
You have?
not like that, but I mean, I've gone off a few times. Yeah.
He used the word retarded, stupid.
Oh, no. I don't swear. I'm not demeaning, but I'll get angry.
Listen, I think it's a, you know, you look at coaches, and I think, again, I don't know what context that clip is from, how old that coach is, or what age group the athletes are. I think if you're talking about the pro ranks, I think that's probably a common communication between players
right.
at the pro level.
It is just so to give context, that is at the pro level. And but we have seen it. I have seen it in tournaments happening right in front of my eyes with kids who are 14, 15 years old as well. So I understand it happens, but that's why I prefaced it by saying I have seen this in all sports, in all levels. And that's why I want to give what's your insight? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think I think at some point everybody has had, you know, you've kind of lost it based on, you know, you know your players are better, you know they can do more, and you tend to lose it. And some people aren't very good at being a bit more, what's what I'm looking for here, positive in their communication. And so we have a default setting of just dropping F-bombs everywhere. And it really doesn't, I think at some point as a coach, the older you get too, is students or student athletes, or even, you know, take it out of the high school context, even rep level athletes, they tend to tune you out. Because if that's your coaching style, I think there's athletes who feed off of that type of energy. And I know there's athletes who will just shut down and they'll quit. Either way, I don't think there's no room in coaching for that type of derogatory, negative, demeaning communication to your athlete. There's ways to get your point across without swearing to the nth degree. I mean, if you drop one here and there, maybe it might be just for effect.
Right.
But if that's for every other word you're going to be utilizing as a method of communication to fire your players up, you're probably going to lose them halfway through the season at some point, because that context and that method of communication is just going to fall on deaf ears eventually.
I want to get to the aspect now of competition. Okay. Cause there are opposing viewpoints. I know in Australia, I don't know exactly when, but they do not keep score until I believe the age of 13. The whole premise is building fundamentals. And I know for rugby, they do the same. Does does coaching, if you're coaching at a level where winning is the end goal, do you think that affects at the grassroots level some of these coaches? Because I witnessed this myself, where coaches coach differently to a certain score. What do you think about the philosophy? Do you think Australia has it right?
Well, I think you see that even in Canada now too. You know, we're not keeping score in certain grassroots levels of soccer and other sports. You know, I'm a bit more old school. You know, I maybe that's just because I grew up differently, and for me, healthy competition, it's important. And I'm not saying, you know, keeping the score and rubbing things in, but I think kids need to know where they're at, and I think knowing, you know, are they down, are they up, and how to adjust accordingly, even if it's 12 years old. I mean, there's 12-year-olds around the world who are playing at a higher level than you and I can even imagine.
Right.
And I can tell you that they're keeping score. You know what I mean? So for me, I think personally, I think it's important. Now, at what age? I don't know what the magic number is. Perhaps it's, you know, 7 or 8, maybe it's into 11 or 12. I'm not sure. But I think kids need to know, because I think coaches, they as you alluded to earlier about, they coach differently based on, if we're not keeping score, then everyone has to play equal playing time. And so everybody's happy. Parents are, you know, that keeps them happy as well. And they feel that they're part of a team. And, but that's a very grassroots level of mentality. I think when you start to get a little bit older and talk about the rep level, that competition, I think you need to expedite that process, because you really want to, these kids want to know where they're at. And I think that competition, that competitive spirit, you know, that uses that a bit of a framework to kind of see where they are. Because, you know, if you have that competitive, super ultra competitive athlete, and they're playing in a league where, you know, he's scoring 6 goals, but they don't keep score, he or she may feed off of that energy and may need that. And for them, you're almost kind of holding them back. Whereas if you put them in a different academy perspective, maybe even in Europe, you know, that coach is, oh my God, this guy's scoring 6 goals. This guy needs to be at a different level. So, I mean, it has its pros and cons, but I don't know what the magic number is, to be honest with you. But I think competition and scorekeeping at a certain level, I think it's important, yeah.
The reason why I brought that up is because sometimes I think we fumble the approach. My brother was reffing a game as a soccer, it was soccer, and the age group was, he said, about 8 or 9. And it was like a rep level soccer game. He said parents were acting so belligerent on the sideline that he stopped the game and he lectured the parents about modeling behavior for their children. So how do we as coaches educate parents? I mean, these are adults we're talking about, and therein lies the problem. If the parents are acting this way, and I could say because of competition, maybe they're trying to fulfill some type of, what's the word we're looking for, when you vicariously live through their children, and that's not healthy.
I think that you what you mentioned about the parents acting the way they are. I know that if I'm a coach and I behave in a certain manner, I think I'm also allowing my players to also act in a similar manner while competing. And I'm also opening the doors for their parents to also conduct themselves in an inappropriate behavior. Now, if I'm a coach or that's not my philosophy, then that's part of my message when I take that player on. And that's also the message that's going to be conveyed to the parents. But if I was the coach that was like the clip that you had played, and you kind of bring that down to a rep level, I wouldn't doubt the players would probably be behavioral. They'd probably be the yellow and red cards handed out everywhere in terms of the dissent, because they wouldn't have the respect for the official. And you can probably have parents in the sidelines who would act the same. And so I think it stems from the coach, because if you allow that to continue and to behave accordingly, then you, through no fault of your own at that point, you are wholeheartedly the responsible for that. And Bob was right to kind of stop that game, because there's no room in that in sport for that type of behavior.
But that's what I mean. That's where I think, because of competition, the responsibility is on the adults and the coaches to act a certain way. And that hasn't been happening. And that's where I'm saying, should we try to alter how our approach to competition? Because we succeed better when we're cooperating and we're teaching our kids, like you said, and there are more coaches with that we saw that you heard on that clip than there are us per se.
But is that a competition issue or is that a philosophical issue? You know,
well said.
I don't think we can blame competition because I think there's coaches and there's, you know, very good, well-led, instructed programs that have good figureheads at the helm and people, right. You know, they attract athletes. You know, I've always said success breeds success. And the minute you start to become successful, I think you're going to start to draw certain athletes to your program. But now you could look at, well, what's this coach like? Is this fits the model for my son or daughter? And do I want that coach teaching my son or daughter values? At the end of the day, 1%, 2% of athletes are going to become professional athletes.
Correct.
And so and at the end of the day, are we raising, these individuals to become model citizens, or are we raise them to be belligerent individuals and they can find a scapegoat in every opportunity things aren't going well. And I think that's part of the problem is that, you know, I think competition in the context of the spirit of the game with good instructional leadership can bode for a very successful game, tournament, championship final, whatever context you want to
well,
have it in.
Well said. I like that.
Okay. So Spags, you said, so a couple things. I did a little research to, I just want your opinion on it. So you said sure. that Jonathan Osorio, when he was playing, was one of the most competitive athletes you've ever coached. Can you coach competitiveness in an athlete?
That's a great question.
So what do you mean by coach competitiveness? Do you think, am I the conduit in which we're trying to exploit that heightened level of competition yes. or competitiveness?
Yes. Can a coach bring out a heightened level of competitiveness in his athletes? Or yeah, is it internal? It's funny. Something you can't coach.
No, I think coaches very much have the ability to bring out a competitive spirit in every athlete. I think it's funny you mention that because I just finished watching the third episode of All or Nothing, Tottenham Hotspurs. I'm not sure if you've seen that. And Mourinho brings in Dele Alli and without carving him, tells him he trains very lazy. And he says, you know, you are one of the best players on this team. You need to change that. And I think that's right away, that just spoke to me what you talked about, the competitiveness. And shortly thereafter, Dele Alli goes on, I think, a 4 or 5 game scoring streak. Hmm. And that is completely 100% a result of Mourinho tapping into his competitive spirit and nature and lighting a fire under him. And I think if he didn't have that, I think he would continue to train 70-80% in his sessions.
But he did it in the most nurturing way. I think that's the key, and you can't teach that as a coach.
Well, this is what I spoke to is building relationships, knowing your audience is of the utmost importance when you're a coach. You cannot go in like the coach you had when you were 12 years old or that clip that you played ripping and tearing and stripping off an athlete. You need to know your audience, like I said earlier. And if you don't know that those athletes are going to respond, then you're only going to make the situation worse. And in fact, they might regress in terms of their performance instead of heightening their level of competition and their level of play.
Right. So you've won 5 championships at the highest level. Winning one is a journey in and of itself. What's the recipe that you have to be able to win 5?
Tony, did you want to answer that?
I can give the recipe a coming second.
I think for I think there's, I always, people always ask me this question, and I always respond the exact same way all the time. There's three things for me. One, you have to have talent. No question. You rarely, very rarely see the Cinderella story happen on an annual basis in whatever sport. Number two, you have to have good team chemistry. And number three, which we spoke about earlier, when we first had the segment, is the luck component. Luck always plays a role at some point in your journey to a championship win. There's no question. You can look at it in different levels. You can look at it when, I'm a football fan, so back when Italy won the World Cup, when they played Australia and they got that penalty shot and they probably wouldn't have, they won, and that was their luck moment where they ended up winning.
Right.
You look at the Raptors last year and winning their championship. There was an element of luck with respect to Durant going down in Thompson.
Right.
Part of sport. It's part of sport. And I'm not saying they wouldn't have been just as successful as a result of if they weren't injured, but that definitely, you know, bodes well for the Raptors in terms of key stars going down again, with respect to your opponent. So luck always plays a role. And I can probably pick, I don't know how many different moments where we got the right bounce. It could have been the referee's call. It could have been a deflection or something that goes your way that you're able to, use that to your advantage, and it steers you in the right way and momentum gathered to go forward to eventually becoming a champion.
But you could use that in other endeavors, being prepared, and then when the opportunity arises, being ready to seize that moment.
Yeah.
That could be used in anything, not necessarily just sport.
Yeah. And you talked about it in one of your earlier podcasts. I can't remember which one it was, but I think you spoke about being prepared and being ready to seize the moment and recognizing that, okay, momentum shifted. This is our opportunity. Let's make the best of it. Let's make the most of it. Let's not squander it. And I think that, you know, from your listeners, for those who might not be, very well-educated in the art of coaching, good coaches don't spend a lot of time, on the negative stuff. They find the next way or the opportunity, grab the clipboard, call a timeout if it's, a sport that allows for that, or halftime team talk in soccer as an example, and they make adjustments. And I think that part is extremely important. The tactics is always one thing. I always look at Pep Guardiola. For me, in the Champions League final this year, he overthought it. And he's his worst enemy. He's a great coach, but he overthinks his tactics. And he doesn't allow his players sometimes to play as well as he has seen them play. And, it's unfortunate because I'm a big Man City fan, but let's not go in that direction. But nonetheless, I think that, again, the luck element, and Tony, I don't know how you feel about that, but I can tell you at least a handful of times where the ball has gone our way. And there's times where we lost an offside final. We would have went six in a row. We would have won. 2014, we lost. I'll never forget this. We were up 1-0. We had no business being up 1-0. And I made a substitution with 5 minutes left, took off a forward so we can close the game out. Set piece, ball goes in the back of the net. It's 1-1. We had no gas left in the tank. We played two overtime games. We were just dying. And turns out we ended up losing in overtime, an extra time, because we gave a penalty shot with 30 seconds left in the game.
And this is the gold medal game.
This is the gold medal game in 2014. And we had, I would say St. Teresa was definitely the better team. No question about it. I was surprised we made it to the final because we had nothing left. But again, you know what? Talk about luck. Back to back inside of 10 minutes. And we went from a gold to a silver.
It's happened twice to me, Spags. Twice. Yeah. It happened in 2018. It was literally 1 minute left. We missed a glorious chance. And
what's the context? You're 0-0?
0-0. I thought we were the slightly better team. It was very even, slightly better team. We just missed a glorious chance that would have put the game away. 30 seconds later, 1 minute later, this is 92nd minute. We get 92nd minute in the offside championship game. We get called for what I thought was a very controversial PK.
Right.
And he banged a PK. Brought the ball to center and the game was over. And I thought it was controversial. And what are you going to do?
That's the luck element.
That's the luck element. Yeah.
We're going to move into our guess what segment. And my co-host Tony is going to lead the charge.
All right, thanks. So I'm going to give you a few quotes that famous coaches have said over the year.
Okay.
And I want you to give me the name of the coach that has said that quote.
Oh, geez. Okay.
If you do not know his name, then I will give you a hint. For example, what sport he coached, at what level he coached, etc.
Okay. All right.
Until you get his name.
Yes.
What?
Okay.
So this first individual.
So you really.
This first individual. I was looking it up. I didn't know that this individual had said all these quotes. So here are three quotes from this first individual. You tell me what this coach's name is.
Okay.
All of these are very famous coaches.
Okay.
Winning isn't everything, it's the only thing.
Vince Lombardi.
Impressive.
Okay.
Well done.
Okay, am I done? Can I stop there? Can I stop there?
So other ones that Vince Lombardi had said, winners never quit and quitters never win. It's not whether you get knocked down, it's whether you get up. You so get good.
Yeah.
Vince Lombardi, right off the bat. Beautiful.
Round two, fight.
So second coach. Again, very popular coach. Here is a quote from this coach. Talent sets the floor. Character sets the ceiling. Another quote. Mental toughness is doing the right thing for the team when it's not the best thing for you. The third quote, do your job.
That's a tough one.
Test your might.
Do
you
your
have to
job.
Give me a hint. You have to give me a hint on that one.
NFL head coach, current.
Oh, NFL. I don't watch NFL.
Can he?
I watch the real football. I don't watch the other football.
can he phone a friend?
Yes, he can phone a friend.
I'm going to call Bob.
No, call me. I'm right here. call me. I'm right here.
I don't know. Belichick? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well done.
Okay.
Well done, buddy. Well done.
Okay.
Well done. All right. Oh, we got another one here.
All right.
Very famous coach. A few quotes. I would rather play 10 men than wait for a player who is late for the bus. So that tells you what sport it is.
Yeah.
Young players are like melons. Only when you open and taste the melon are you 100% sure that the melon is good.
What kind of coach is this?
So,
oh my God.
And the last one, if they made a film of my life, I think they should get George Clooney to play me. He's a fantastic actor, and my wife thinks he would be ideal.
Oh man, a footy coach.
Footy coach. Eccentric coach.
I don't know, Mourinho?
Excellent.
Bonus question. This is what this person said. A common mistake among those who work in sport is spending a disproportional amount of time on X's and O's as compared to the time spent learning about people. He's a Ooh. Very famous Duke basketball coach. What's his name?
Krzyzewski?
Spell it. That's your question.
Well done.
Oh, you unbelievable.
Go for it. Spell it. I want to hear this.
Try it.
Oh, jeez.
Finish him.
K-R-Y.
No.
No?
No. Dave, you want to try?
K-R- I don't know. I was going to say Zed? Why.
So his name Zed? Is Mike Krzyzewski. K-R-Z.
Oh,
Y-Z-E-W-S-K-I. Spags, overall, you did well, buddy. Overall,
you did well.
Okay, so while you're still on, first of all, three questions.
Yes.
Simple question.
Okay, go.
Mourinho wants George Clooney to play him in his movie. Who do you want to play you?
I've been called Orlando Bloom a few different times. So
yes, yes, I like that. I like that.
That is fantastic. That's beautiful. Next one. And this is important, and this is important for me too. What do you remember more, your big wins or your big losses?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's even. I can remember I draw on examples from 2007 when we lost in Windsor AAA, like it was yesterday, in the Osorio example when he was in grade 9. I mean, that came to me like nothing. And I can also tell you, you know, we had two undefeated years, and I don't know which team was the better team in all the years that I've been coaching. So I think they're kind of one and the same for me. Because you know what, there's such a heightened experience and element of joy. And then there's such a, and you hit rock bottom on the other. So you go from two polar opposite ends of the spectrum, and both two different emotional roller coasters. And I don't think you can forget either of those. And I think, as you would allude to, when you won and when you lost, you can easily draw on those examples and even the details on how they actually happen.
The losses stay with me a lot longer.
Yeah, well, they're harder to overcome. No question about it. Because you know, when you win, it's this euphoric state. You feel great about it. You move on. You share some hugs and handshakes and hoist the trophy. But the losses, you're just getting on the bus and going home.
Yeah.
And it's eerily silent. And you know, you have this heartbreak and for some graduating players, tears. I mean, that sticks with you. You know, if it doesn't, then you're not human. Yeah, 100%.
So another question.
Yes.
So we know that Vince Lombardi says winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. We have all these beautiful Lombardiisms. One very common Spagsism. What do you always say? Is there something you always say and then the kids start saying it?
Yes. Time spent equals success.
Okay. Nice. Like it.
And I think on that, we should end on that note. It was great having you as a guest. Tony, it's great again having you as a co-host, and I hope we can do it again.
That would be my honor.
All right, guys. Take care.
Take it easy, guys.
Thank you.
I really enjoy these types of discussions. It's always great to look for opportunities for growth. But how important is the role of a coach, especially someone like Greg, who is an educator as well, to the young people? Parents entrust their children with us, and we have to embrace that responsibility, which has to mean that winning cannot be the focus. Building character must be the goal. It's truly unfortunate that I have witnessed abhorrent behavior during my time coaching. I remember one incident in particular. It was a coach that should not be entrusted with the task of coaching. I remember this coach from Father Henry Carr. His name is Paul Melnick. If anyone out there is listening and has a way of getting in touch with this dude, please do. And tell him there's an open invitation to come on Tucci Talks and share his side of the story so we have the entire story. But as I recall it, he wanted to fight me in front of the entire student body at Rimrocker. I just did the smart thing and I isolated him and I brought him into a coach's room and just tore a strip off this dude and his lack of professionalism and his entire approach to coaching. And I recall having very colorful language. Maybe he remembers it differently, but this man should not be coaching. He is doing way more harm than good, and these are the coaches that we must get rid of in this profession. It always feels better to do more good, and that's exactly what we will be doing next week when Ken Dvorsky joins Tucci Talks. He will be sharing his weight loss journey of more than 100 pounds during this pandemic. Truly fascinating stuff. Make sure to like and subscribe to the podcast if you're enjoying this content. Support the podcast so we can continue to grow here on Tucci Talks. Don't forget the crazy karaoke. It's an oldie but a goodie. Get in touch with me, David, at TucciTalk75.com. Also, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, TucciTalk75. That's it for me. The weeks are going by fast. I can't believe I've already completed 13 episodes in this inaugural season of Tucci Talks. Enjoy the rest of your day and the rest of your week. And remember, you must always, always add, that's right, a little funk to your day. We'll be right back.